from the Cyber Hub bunker and studio. You're tuning in to the Cyber Hub podcast. And now for your host and CISO, James Azar.
Good morning, security gang. Welcome to another episode of the Cyber Hub podcast. We're wrapping up this week, Thursday, April 11th, 2024. We've got a packed show for all of y'all today, a variety of cybersecurity news, some really important ones around vulnerabilities, others around threat intel sharing, and then an update on the massive AT&T breach that kind of happened a few weeks ago, but then, you know, they kind of released it on Easter weekend, hoping it would die off. It hasn't. It's only brought out all the ambulance chasers, and so there's that as well. So without further ado, again, my schedule here has been crazy. I haven't had a chance to go. And like yesterday, I went to this local coffee shop here to get an espresso, hoping that that would be like a place that was like a 5-minute drive. It's like, okay, I'll go 5 minutes, bring an espresso, come back, have a coffee cup, cheers with all y'all. It was disgusting. It was like, yeah, just why? If you don't buy espresso beans, don't sell espressos. Rule of thumb. Coffee cup, cheers to all y'all, whatever you're drinking this morning. Can't wait to be back in the studio to cheers one with all y'all there. All right, coffee cup cheers. Let's go ahead and get started with AT&T revising some of its number based on the data breach it experienced back in mid-March, really, when data started circulating and then confirmed over the holiday. That original number was around 73 million victims. It's now looking like it's around 51 million individuals. Still a large number, but fairly, definitely not within like the top 10. Of data breaches in terms of size and capacity. AT&T is a household name. AT&T is a very, very large organization. And as such, anytime to go through an event like this, it obviously deems some conversation. But 51 million individuals, according to their filing with the Maine Attorney General, the company at the time only specified that social security numbers as being compromised. Now they're giving full scope of the compromise, which includes full names, email, mailing address, phone number, date of birth, social security number, and AT&T account number, and their passcode. To the best of their knowledge, personal financial information and call history were not included in this specific data breach. It's believed that the data has been circulating online since at least 2021, but its origin remains unknown. AT&T has denied that this came from its own servers, as they have been unable to trace something like that. Customers are being offered a 1-year free credit monitoring and identity theft protection services. So there's that update from AT&T. A threat actor is using a PowerShell script that was likely crafted with the help of AI systems like ChatGPT, Gemini, or Copilot. The adversary used the script in an email campaign in March of this year that targeted tens of organizations in Germany to deliver the Rhodomontosis information stealer. Researchers at Proofpoint attributed the attack to a threat actor tracked as TA547, believed to be an initial access broker part of the centralized kill chain. And kind of that part, the initial access brokers play a critical part in the delivery of malware. TA547 is also known as Scully Spider. It's been active since at least 2017. It delivers a variety of malware, some that we've talked about here on the bank, like ZLoader, Panda Banker, Atomos, and the Mozart Boat and Red Alert systems. Recently, they started using the Rhodomontosis modular stealer that constantly expands its data collection capabilities from clipboard, browser cookies, and so much more. And again, this is where the SSO piece comes in, where they're trying to steal tokens using these information stealers, because they realize that a lot of organizations are now doing SSO. So if they can steal that sign-in token and actually gain access and persistence into the environment, and they can deploy malware across the environment and also map the network. The messages linked in the phishing campaign was a zip archive protected with the password MAR26. It contained the malicious shortcut file .lnk. Accessing the shortcut file triggered a PowerShell to run a remote script. The researchers explained that this method allowed the malicious code to be executed in memory without ever touching the disk, and thus also obfuscating it. Analyzing the PowerShell script that loaded it, the researchers noticed that it included a pound hash sign followed by specific comments for each component, which are really uncommon for the way a normal human with code, but very consistent with what an AI would generate as kind of a command. So there's that there as well. The researchers noted that while they cannot absolutely be certain that it came from a large language model solutions, the script definitely hints at that. And this may be one of the first confirmed cases that we see AI being used in code. So something to keep an eye on, obviously, as we see this expand and the use of AI become more and more commonplace within our businesses. It's also becoming very common with our adversaries and threat actors. Palo Alto's PAN-OS operating system received several patches for its vulnerabilities, including several high severity flaws that could be exploited to disrupt the firewall. The main CVE here is 2024-3385, which allows, if exploited, for denial of service attacks, and it would allow an unauthenticated remote attacker to cause hardware-based firewalls to reboot using specially crafted packets, and thus essentially creating a denial of service condition. So that specific CVE was patched, and another firewall denial of service vulnerability that could be exploited remotely without authentication was CVE 2024-3384. It can be used to reboot the PAN-OS firewalls using specially crafted NTLM packets. Similar, it can cause the firewall to enter maintenance mode, requiring manual intervention to restore the system. And the additional denial of service flaw is CVE 2024-3382. This one has a higher attack complexity. It enables an attacker to send a burst of malicious packets through the firewall, preventing it from processing traffic. So all in all, those have been patched, and you want to make sure you get your devices patched up and ready to go. Something we overlooked in reviewing Patch Tuesday yesterday was this specific vulnerability around Azure Kubernetes clusters. CVE 2024-299990 would allow an unauthenticated threat actor to steal credentials and affect resources beyond the security scope managed by the Azure Kubernetes service confidential containers, according to the advisory. The response team said that the Azure Kubernetes service bug carries a CVSS severity score of 9 out of 10 and could be exploited to take over confidential guests and containers beyond the network stack it might be bound to. The unauthenticated attacker can move the same workload onto a machine they control where the attacker is root, and thus essentially taking over the processes. The Azure Kubernetes service bug headlines a massive patch bundle that included fixes to a whole bunch of stuff in the Microsoft Defender for IoT and a critical severity in the Windows Secure Boot bypass that marked as already exploited. All in all, Microsoft is facing intense criticism. And I don't know about that one. This was kind of one of those lines where I read here and I was like, really, are you sure? Are you sure they're facing intense criticism? Or are they dealing with nation states as a privately held organization, and the government's just looking at them going like, you should do more to fight China and Russia all by yourself as a company, because we sure don't have the balls to do it. Sorry for that, but I can't hide the feeling I have there with how we're treating Microsoft and being thrown under the bus. So there's that. If you have an LG TV, you may want to pay special attention to this, as researchers from Bitdefender said that that there are several bugs within the LG TV, three of which carry a 9.1 out of 10 severity rating on the LG WebOS, the software that comes on most LG TVs. The vulnerability infects WebOS versions 4 through 7. LG has not responded to requests for comments, but released patches for the vulnerability as part of its software update on March 22nd. Each of the vulnerabilities would allow attackers to take a different action. CVE 2023-6317 would add an extra user to the DV set, while CVE 2023-6318 would allow them to elevate access they gained with the first bug to fully take over the device. And this affects the LG ThinkQ smartphone app, which can be used to control the TV. To set up the app, the user must enter a PIN code into the display on the TV screen. An error in the account handler lets an attack skip the PIN verification entirely and create a privileged user account. The two other bugs, CVE 2023-6319 and 6320, would allow an attacker to drop malware on the device, monitor traffic, or move throughout a smart home network. So there's about 91,000 devices of these around the world that are exposed to the internet and vulnerable to these bugs. That's 91,000 likely households and some offices. Since the publication, the number dropped to around 87,500, meaning the security people actually paid attention. More than half are in South Korea. The rest are in Finland, Sweden, the US, and Hong Kong. Bitdefender said it disclosed the issue to LG on November 1. It took the company nearly 4.5 months to issue a patch. And so there's that. If you've got one of those, make sure you get it addressed. CISIS released its threat hunting and internal malware analysis system for public use, promising capabilities for automatic analysis of potentially malicious files or uniform resource locators. The system, called Malware Next Gen, will now be available for any organization to submit malware samples and other suspicious artifacts for analysis. It would allow CISA to be more effective to effectively support partners by automating analysis of newly found malware. This is something that CISA has been working on for quite some time. It's been available in November. They issued it out to the .gov/.mil organizations with 400 registered users submitting 1,600 files. All in all, now this is available to the public and a great tool for many practitioners to use. The group behind the Change Healthcare ransom payment are trying to hide their $22 million ransom there, apparently, and they're stepping up their laundering efforts there. 6 weeks after executing an attack that crippled the U.S. healthcare system, the gang LinkedIn incident has picked up the pace of laundering the proceeds of an alleged ransom payment, even as the attackers implicated in the breach continue to maintain an extremely low profile. Earlier this month, cybercrime researchers reported that a Bitcoin wallet linked to a previous Alpha V ransoms has received $22 million, fueling speculation that United may have ponied up a ransom payment to end the ordeal there. Over the last week or so, they've seen an increase in laundering activities, according to Ari Redbord of the TRM Labs global head of policy, telling CyberScoop in an email on March 27th, for instance, that they observed 50 bitcoins, approximately $3.5 million, move from wallet associated with the group to a mixing service. In addition, between March 22nd and 27th, they saw multiple withdrawals by wallets associated with the group sent to a global exchange. The FBI is not commenting on whether or not they're aware of this. Obviously, it's an ongoing investigation. They're likely going to not comment on it. But nonetheless, this is significant for a whole slew of reasons. And it just shows you the challenges that criminals go through there and how we can actually refuse to pay, what can do, and kind of, you know, Alpha V going like, we did something pretty big here. We're on everyone's radar. We need to hide. Cash out. Let's go hang out in Koh Samui, Thailand. The U.S., Japan, and Philippines are joining forces in a cybersecurity defense with a strategic cyber threat sharing arrangement in the wake of the rising attacks by China, North Korea, and Russia. The initiative will launch during high-level bilateral talks between President Biden, Japanese Prime Minister Kishida, and Philippine President Ferdinand Marcos Jr. during a trilateral summit in Washington this week. According to the English version of the Neon Kaizai Shimbun, the cyber alliance comes on the heels of Vault Typhoon's essentially espionage efforts, and this would allow traditional U.S. allies, Japan, Taiwan, Philippines, and the U.S. all to align in some threat information sharing there to hopefully increase their ability to handle Chinese threat that's out there. That's it for our show this morning. We'll be back to Monday, with a whole lot more. Tomorrow, Chris Fallon and I will be on at 11 a.m. Eastern talking cyber. So join us there. We'll be talking Zero Trust, I believe. So come on and tune in. That'll be at 11 a.m. tomorrow, and then we'll be back Monday, 9 a.m. Eastern. Please make sure to subscribe. Check out our Substack for all the latest and greatest. And thank you all for tuning in. Have a great rest of your day. Have a great weekend. And most importantly, stay cyber safe.
We love feedback, so make sure to connect with us on social media and subscribe to our podcast on your favorite podcast listening platform.